Today, my name is Elijah Davis, Minister of 12th Apostolic Sanitarian Congregation, Mount Zion, South Mount Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is June 12, 2016, the eighth day of the fourth month, 2020. We'll start our second service today with a song that I've written entitled, The Dusty Roads and Sandal Feet. Page 21. So this will be part two. We'll take up where we left off on our last study. It says, Cyrus, under his command, the Medo-Persian army marched into Babylon, had not yet been born when the prophet Isaiah wrote of him that the Elohim remembered his promise. And when Belshazzar felt perfectly secure on the night of the revelry and fatal debauchery, Yahweh opened before Cyrus the two-leaved gates and made possible the capture of the kingdom. There the Medes and Persians met Daniel and his companions, who called Cyrus' attention unto the scriptures, which not only predicted his victory, but even foretold his name. Having seen and felt the power of Yahweh, Cyrus was moved to decree. Ezra 1, 2, and 11. Thus says Cyrus, king of Persia, Yahweh Elohim of heaven hath given me all the kingdoms of the earth. And he has charged me to build him an house at Jerusalem, which is in Judea. Who is there among you of all his people to tell him be with him and let him go up unto Jerusalem, which is in Judah, and build the house of the Yahweh Elohim of Israel. He is the Elohim which is in Jerusalem, and whosoever remaineth in any place where he sojourneth, let the men of his place help him with silver and with gold and with goods and with beasts besides the freewill offering for the house of the Yahweh that is in Jerusalem. Then rose up the chief of the fathers of Judah and Benjamin, and the priests and the Levites with all them whose spirit Elohim had raised to go up to build the house of Yahweh which is in Jerusalem. And all they that were about them strengthened their hands with the vessels of the silver, with gold, and with goods, and with beasts, and with precious things, besides all that was willing offered. Also Cyrus the king brought forth the vessels of the house of Yahweh, which Nebuchadnezzar had brought forth out of Jerusalem, and had put them in the house of his gods, even those that Cyrus king of Persia bring forth by the hand of Mithridat, the treasurer, and he and numbered them unto Sheshbazzar, the prince of Judah. And this is the number of them: 30 charges of gold, 1,000 charges of silver, 29, 30 basins of gold, silver basins of a second sort, 410, and other vessels, 1,000. All the vessels of gold and of silver were 5,400. All these did Sheshbazzar bring up with them of the captivity that were brought up from Babylon unto Jerusalem. It is not difficult to see that if the rulers of the Medo-Persian Empire had continued to rule in the same spirit as Cyrus, the kingdom would have stood until this day. That kingdom, though, gave way to Grecia, Grecia to Rome, and Rome to the nations of the day. Plain enough it is to see that the kingdoms of today still stand because Elohim has purposed it so. They're growing more and more independent of the Yahweh, who will sooner or later bring the end of them too. We're looking down through the streams of time, down to the kingdoms of today, which are depicted by the feet and toes of the great image, the Spirit of the Truth wrote. And whereas thou sawest the feet and toes, part of polished clay and part of iron, the kingdom shall be divided, but this shall be in it of the strength of the iron. Forasmuch as thou sawest the iron mixed with miry clay, and as the toes of the feet, thou sawest the toes of the feet were part of the iron and part of the clay. So the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. And whereas thou sawest iron mixed with the miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of man, but they shall not cleave one to another, even as iron is not mixed with the clay. And in the days of these kings shall the Elohim of heaven set up a kingdom, which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left unto other people, but it will break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. Forasmuch as thou sawest that the stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, and that it break in pieces the iron, the brass, the clay, the silver, and the gold, the great Elohim hath made known unto the king, which shall come to pass hereafter, and the dream is certain, and the interpretation thereof sure. Daniel 2:41-45. Rather than merging into the kingdom of Yahweh, they will have to be destroyed. Example number 5. Now let us see what benefit the kingdoms and nations reap from coming in contact with the church. Babylon, Medo, Persia, Greece, and Rome, who came in contact with the church, make up the civilized world of today. Look at the nations and people, the heathen and somewhat isolated places of the earth, who were not so fortunate as to meet the church as early as the other nations. Still further, look at those who are still more isolated in the remotest parts of the earth, who have had no contact with the church, not until just recently. Most of them are but a little better than animals, not only in the intelligence, but even in progress. by the people who were fortunate enough to be the closest to the religion of Yahshua, or you will find the most intelligent, the most prosperous. England, for example, who translated the Bible and published and scattered it throughout the world unto all peoples and languages, became the greatest of the nations in its time. Then the United States, but a sister nation unto the English Empire, who less than two centuries ago founded its government upon the principles of the Bible and inscribed on its dollar "In God We Trust," and who also established the American Bible Society, and but a comparatively few years became the greatest of nations, as did the Hebrews in their day. On the other hand, those who turned against the religion of the Bible were left desolate. The blessings became a curse to them. The hatred of Jews, the hated Jews, for whom there is no spot on earth, are the best example. Germany, who led out in the Reformation but who turned back from it, has reaped a sorrowful harvest too. And what is true with the nations is just as true with individuals' homes, families, and communities. If you will take a little time to observe, you will see this law of blessings and curses in demonstration everywhere without exception. The world was founded upon religion, and you can rest assured that when religion disappears from the earth, the world will disappear with it. Those who fall in love with the truth will find that blessings will reciprocally fall in love with them. Let us read 2 Thessalonians 2, 8-12. And then shall that wicked be revealed, whom the Yahshua shall consume with the spirit of his mouth, and shall destroy with the brightness of his coming, even him whose coming is as the working of Satan, with all power and signs and lying and wonders, and with all deceivableness of the unrighteousness in them that perish, because they received not the love of the truth, that they might be saved. And for this cause Elohim shall send them strong delusion, that they should believe a lie, that they all might be damned, who believed not the truth, but had pleasure in unrighteousness. We see that if we do not fall in love with the truth, deception is inevitable. No, none are deceived by coming in contact with error, for we are in contact with it anyway, from the time we are born until the time we die. But everyone who does not love the truth is sure to be deceived, regardless what he may do to avoid it. And those who are satisfied with the truth of yesterday, who are not looking for the fresh truth for today, and the throne of Yahweh, not looking for the meat in due season, such ones will find themselves in as terrible a predicament as did the Jews as spewed out. Deuteronomy 30, verse 15 and 19. See, I have set before thee this day life and good, and death and evil. I call heaven and earth to record this day against you, that I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore choose life, that both thou and thy seed may live. Example number 6. If we fail to profit by what Elohim tells us, we shall fail as badly as, if not worse, as any who have failed before us. I think none of you who have had personal contact with Yahweh know these things through the experience of your own. Doubtless you have found that you cannot long prevent explosion while keeping fire and gunpowder in the same room, that you cannot serve the devil and yet have peace and security. Let me illustrate this by an actual incident. A certain man dreamed that a horse killed him by kicking him. To safeguard his life, he ever after kept his distance from all horses. Nevertheless, one windy day, as he was walking down the street, he passed the blacksmith's establishment, in front of which was hanging a sign with a horseshoe painted on it. The sign suddenly fell on his head, and he died from the impact. We can no more avoid the consequences of sin and of isolation from Elohim than could the dreamer avoid death by dodging it. We never know what the day will bring forth, and we cannot afford to isolate ourselves from Elohim even for a moment. Neither can we say definitely that we will or will not do this, that, or the other thing. Example number 7. Some years ago, while in Europe, I heard that one of my cousins had left for America. I then said to myself, "Poor cousin, I will never leave home and go to live anywhere as far away as America for any reason." But about that time, I, along with others, was falsely accused of conspiracy. It was in the season when the nights were long, and as we put on the lights in our store one morning before daylight, a mob gathered with guns and stones and stormed the windows. So it was that just a few months after I took pity on my poor cousin's estrangement from his homeland, I found myself in America in the same house with him. It was a great disappointment at first. No, not lesser than Joseph's of old. But what a favor at last. Yahweh blessed the mob. Only Yahweh knows the future. And we should place our hopes and ambition in His mighty hand. Then and then only will we come to the top. And if we are tempted to say, "We will or will not do this or that," and then let us remember Jonah. He said he would not bear a message to Nineveh, and straightway took a boat for Tarshish. But the boatmen threw him overboard, and the great fish picked him up and brought him right back to the place whence he was trying to run away. Nebuchadnezzar, king of the Babylon, thought to perpetuate his kingdom by ordering all his subjects to bow down to his golden image. The three Hebrews, though, defied his purpose and changed the course of history. The men who threw the Hebrews into the fire furnace were themselves burned to death, but not a hair of the Hebrews' heads was singed all the time they remained inside the fire furnace. Let us, with the psalmist, lift Psalms 8, verse 1 to 6. O Yahweh, our Yahweh, how excellent is thy name in all the earth, who hast set thy glory above the heaven. Out of the mouth of babes and sucklings hast thou ordained strength because of thine enemy, that thou mightest still the enemy and the avenger. When I consider thy heaven, the work of thy fingers, the moon and the stars, which thou hast ordained, what is man, that thou art mindful of him, and the son of man, that thou visitest him? For thou hast made him a little lower than the angels, and hast crowned him with glory and honor. Thou madest him to have dominion over the works of thy hands. Thou hast put all things under his feet. The prophet Malachi was instructed to write for the people that were to live in the time of the end. Let us read in chapter 4, Malachi 4, 1 to 3. For behold, the day cometh that shall burn as an oven, and all the proud yea and all that do wickedly shall be stubble, and the day that cometh shall burn them up, saith Yahshua of hosts, that it shall leave them neither root nor branch. But unto you that fear my name shall the Son of Righteousness arise with healing in his wings. And ye shall go forth and grow up as calves in stall, and ye shall tread down the wicked, for they shall be ashes under the soles of your feet in the day that I shall do this, saith Yahshua of hosts. Is it not better to be a human being in the Yahweh's order, a beautiful ever-living creature, than to be ashes under the soles of the saints? Why not now respond to his call and make life what it ought to be? Malachi 4:4-6. Remember ye the law of Moses, my servant, which I commanded unto him in Horeb for all Israel, with the statutes and judgment. Behold, I will send ye Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of Yahweh. And he shall turn the heart of the fathers unto the children, and the heart of the children unto their fathers, lest I come and smite the earth with a curse. Are ye waiting, watching, praying, and hoping that when this antitypical Elijah the prophet appears and calls on you, your heart be turned toward your children and their hearts toward you, or are you crawling under your shell, as it were, for fear that you be deceived if you should meet him? Life, you see, is what you make it. Most people do not know how to make it better, but if you know these things, happy are ye if you do them. To summarize this study, we have learned that we have been put in this world for a purpose, that if we want salvation and blessings, we must cooperate with the Father. This we can do by following the example of the Yahweh, truth-hungering people. To enable us to do this, he has seen to it that both the glories and calamities of both classes have been noted in his book. If we compare our works with Noah's works, we will see whether we measure up with him in the obeying present truth. Neither the antediluvians nor the post-diluvians did profit from the Noah's preaching. For the former did not believe it's possible to flood the earth and perish. The latter did not believe it possible for the earth not to be flooded again. They built the Tower of Babel because they feared another flood, although they were plainly told that there will be such a flood no more. Elohim, though, not only destroyed their work, but also confounded their language, and in exchange gave them all different languages, so that few could understand one another. If we work to fulfill Elohim's plans for us, we shall never be confused or confounded. Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, at last saw these things as Elohim sees them, but the hard way, not before Elohim turned him loose for 7 years to eat grass like the oxen. Later, when he came unto himself, he acknowledged Yahweh as the Yahweh who rules both heaven and earth. Let us do better than did the king. Then the Belshazzar, the king who failed to profit by the experience of Nebuchadnezzar, overnight lost himself, his kingdom, and his all. Ruler followed ruler, and finally the kingdom passed to the Medo-Persians, then to the Grecians, next to the Romans, and finally to the nations of today. Nations, you see, belong to Yahweh, and he lets them be ruled by whomsoever he will. The nations who came nearest to Yahweh and his teaching became great and respectable nations, and those who kept themselves away from him are not much better than animals. It is best to learn of what Elohim wants you to do, then do just that. Life truly is just what we make it, no less and no more. How is your choice? Now you are at the two crossroads. Which will it be for you, the wide or the narrow? Which? Alright, that's the end of Timely Greetings 1, number 50. He has a poem here at the end, it looks like, by J.B. Pounds. It says, "The gifts of Yahweh. His gifts are greater than my dreams, the gifts of Yahweh to me. As countless as the sun's golden beams, as boundless as the sea. I ask the part he gives the whole, himself and all beside. His loving kindness overflows my soul in rushing as the tide. Within my heart he shall have place to rule and reign supreme. My voice will ever praise him for the grace of which I never could dream. His gifts are greater than my dreams, the gifts of him who set me free, and more abundant daily seems the grace of Yahweh unto me. Okay, that's the end of that. Let's go right on into the next study, first time of greeting number 51. And it says the text for prayer, it says, take no thought for the morrow. Okay, read from Christ's Object Lessons, begin on page 18 by Ellen G. White. Yes, for the Yahshua sought to remove that which obscured the truth. His words placed the teachings of nature as well as of the Bible in a new aspect and made them a new revelation. He gave the lessons, consider the lilies of the field, how they grow, and the simplicity of their natural beauty. They toil not, neither do they spin, and yet I say unto you that even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. Then followed the sweet assurance and the important lesson. Wherefore, if Yahweh so clothe the grass of the field, which today is and tomorrow is cast into the oven, shall he not much more clothe ye, O ye of little faith? In the Sermon on the Mount, these words were spoken unto the multitude, among whom were men and women full of the worries and perplexities, and sore with the disappointment and sorrow. But Yahshua continued, therefore take no thought, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or wherewithal shall we be clothed? For after all these things do the Gentiles seek. For your heavenly Father knoweth that you have need of all these things. We are now to pray that as Yahshua's servants we do all we can to remove that which obscures the truth of today. If we find light through nature and the Bible, that we realize that the Yahshua cares for us more than he cares for the lily, that we learn to trust in him and to do his bidding, and be no longer like the Gentiles who worry about the things of this world, that we know he will see that we have all our needs if our chief business is to advance his kingdom. Is religion something living and growing, or is it something dead and wanting, or waning? Let's read that again. This is a title to Time of Greetings on Volume 1, Number 51. Is religion something living and growing? Question mark. Or is it something dead and waning? Question mark. July 26, 1947, by V.T. Harlow. Is religion something that grows and expands? Or is it something that stands still? Just the other day we heard on the radio a certain minister boast that his denomination has not added or discarded doctrine ever since it was organized. Is this something to brag about, or is it something to bemoan? This is a question unto which we now wish to find the answer. If the world does not stand still, if it makes the progress it does, then why should the church stand still? Why should the church not know more of Yahweh and more of the Bible today than she did yesterday? Why should Christianity be proud of not adding Bible doctrines? What a world this would be if everything was not moving ahead as it is. If we were to compare the world's increased knowledge and accomplishment in the last 50 or 100 years with the church's increased knowledge and accomplishments in the same period of time, we may see that there is no comparison whatsoever. Look at the progress the world has made, and look at the stupidity which the church is cultivating. Yes, I say cultivating because it seems that rather than bemoaning the fact of not having added or discarded doctrine, and rather than encouraging the people to be on the watch for Elohim's visitations, they are making it their business if they keep the laity from coming in contact with the Yahweh's messengers and his progressive truth. With meat in due season, with Elohim's messages for today, anything that does not originate in their own conventions, the laity are told to have nothing to do with it. This they do simply because they themselves do not accept the true Elohim sin. Because any of their congregation came in contact with and accepted, they naturally will have to join truth wherever truth is. So it is their chief business to keep the laity in darkness and in fear that someone is to deceive them if they expose themselves to anything that their ministers do not approve of. It says, such a course may hold back progress for years, but it can never succeed. No, not any more than did the opponents of Galileo make the earth flat by compelling him to recant his position that the earth is round, and no more than Rome succeeded against the Protestant Reformation, or the priests and rabbis against Christianity. It is therefore high time to realize that people who must be held in ignorance of something in order to be kept loyal unto the church are certainly not worth having, that the only way to have them really loyal and firmly established in the truth and saved in the kingdom is to teach the truth and then give them freedom to choose so that they themselves might personally know what is the truth and what is the error. To keep them in darkness of what the deceivers teach, if they be deceivers, is to keep them ignorant of what is in the air. It is to forever close heaven's communication line and to make the people spiritual invalids and automation. For the people must be themselves must know what the truth is, and for themselves must decide what to do with it if they are ever to be granted admission into the kingdom. Both those who must be fenced in or led with a rope or driven with a tub, as it were, into the kingdom, and those who build the fence, pull the rope, or hold the club, will find the door closed. And we'll hear the Master say, "Depart from me, I never knew you." Ministers are not called to be taskmasters, nor conscience for others. They are called to be teachers of the truth. If the church is not making progress with the truth, if she is not periodically adding unquestionable knowledge to knowledge, then I am sure she has nothing to boast about. She is inactive, her communication line with heaven broken, is Elohim forsaken dead. She can never serve her members with meat in due season from the throne of Yahweh. Let us, for example, take religion as it is in the Bible today. It did not come all at once. Rather, it took something like 4,000 years to accumulate and about 2,000 more years to comprehend, as much as the church was comprehended by now. If we should compare Abel's knowledge of religion with the Christian knowledge of it, we should no doubt discover that there is no comparison, that Abel knew comparatively only the very first principle of the Christian faith. If religion, therefore, is not something living, growing, and progressing, then what is it? Abel's religion of 6,000 years ago has advanced and expanded to meet the people's necessities of today. This is done only by the inspiration adding unto it and itself unfolding it. If the church is not commensurately growing and expanding, then how can she be a living church, and how can she keep up with the signs of the times and with the progress in the sanctuary above, let us read Ephesians 4:11-14. And he gave some apostles and some prophets and some evangelists and some pastors and teachers for the perfection of the saints, for the work of the ministry, for the edifying of the body of Yahshua, till we all come in the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of Elohim unto a perfect man, unto the measure of the stature of the fullness of Yahshua, that we henceforth be no more children tossed to and fro and carried about with every wind of doctrine by the sleight of men and the cunning craftiness whereby they lie in wait to deceive. Inspiration makes it plain that Elohim's plan is that the church should ever be growing both in knowledge and perfection till we all come in the unity of the faith, and of the knowledge of the Son of Elohim unto a perfect man, unto the measure of the stature of the fullness of the Yahshua, that we henceforth be no more children, tossed to and fro and carried about with every wind of doctrine, by the sly of men and cunning craftiness whereby they lie in wait to deceive. Since the church has not yet attained the standard set forth in this verse, the scripture is obvious that she needs to have greater knowledge of the Bible religion than she has at the present time. Being far from having reached such unity of the faith, of knowledge, and perfection, we see the need as clear as crystal. We as Christians need to start growing, otherwise the season of such growth will pass and we shall be left but dwarfs, not having advanced far enough to be eligible for a home in the kingdom. Then shall it come to pass that all such unmatured Christians shall bitterly cry out, the harvest is past, the summer is ended, we are not saved. Jeremiah 8:20. Bible knowledge, you see, is heaven's way to unto salvation and eternity. But the modern minister way is to keep men ignorant of what is taught outside their own circle, so they may have men under their control. That truth is growing and that we should keep pace with it, we shall now read. Revelation 14:6-10. And I saw another angel fly in the midst of heaven, having the everlasting gospel to preach unto them that dwell on the earth, and unto every nation and kindred and tongue and people, saying, with a loud voice, fear Elohim and give glory unto him, for the hour of his judgment is come. And worship him that made heaven and earth and the sea and the fountains of waters. And there followed another angel, saying, Babylon is fallen, that great city, because she made all nations to drink of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. And the third angel followed them, saying, with a loud voice, if any man worship the beast in his image and receive his mark in his forehead or in his hand, the same shall drink of the wine of the wrath of Yahweh, which is poured out without mixture into the cup of his indignation, and he shall be tormented with fire and brimstone in the presence of the holy angels and in the presence of the Lamb. Here are represented three messages, one following the other. Unless we keep pace with each of them progressively, we shall find ourselves trailing behind the time, as are the Jews unto this day. Those who fail to keep pace with the truth, as inspiration unfolds, it can never come into the unity of the faith, and unto a full knowledge of the Son of Yahweh, unto a perfect man, unto the measure of the stature of the fullness of Yahshua. Such will forever be children tossed to and fro and carried about with every wind of doctrine by the sly of man. Ephesians 4:13-14. Plainly then, religion itself is something living and unfolding, but the tragedy is that not all are keeping pace with it. Let us look into this vital subject even more concretely. Truth, you know, kept unfolding and growing even after Moses' death. For the Jews, though, killed the prophets and did not advance any further. Then where Moses left, them. In fact, they ever retrogressed, and so they are where they are today because they failed to exchange their course, even though prophets after prophet was sent unto them from the pit into which they were fast falling. Even Yahshua himself failed to awaken them to the dreadfulness of their situation. Only a comparatively few saw the red light, the danger, and returned to the Yahweh. This halting and backsliding never did stop. It was continued on and on until this very day. Even the early Christian church herself eventually went to sleep and brought on the dark ages of religion. Moreover, though, inspiration placed the bright light of the truth in the hand of the Reformation during the darkest hour of that day. Yet the church as a whole failed to see the light, failed to see the need of the Reformation. Rather than going to the light, the church did all she could to put it out. For the elect, nevertheless, walked out of the darkness and into the light. Thus it was that another sect, the Lutheran denomination, was organized. But this is only the beginning of the Reformation, as one truth after another began to unfold, and each forced the inception of a new denomination, because each of the older daughter sects following in the footsteps of the mother herself refused to keep pace with the messages. Indeed, the Lutheran denomination itself, like all others before or after, was satisfied to remain where Luther left it, and so of necessity another, the Presbyterian denomination, came into being. Thus, down the stream of time, one denomination after another has done likewise. This is how it has been all through the centuries. This is why not one of the churches has climbed any higher than the founders left them. And this is why Christians, rather than growing into the unity of the faith, are with each passing day becoming more and more disunited in faith and hostile unto each other's faith. To boast, therefore, that one's denomination has never added a doctrine or laid off one, is to admit that his church is at a standstill, virtually saying, we are rich and increase his goods and have need of nothing, when in fact they are wretched, miserable, poor, blind, and naked, but know it not. Very obviously, religion is something which grows and unfolds, but its people as an organization have never kept pace with it. For the most astonishing part of it is that those who have led the denomination after the death of their founders, rather than teach the laity to watch and to wait for more revealed truth, instead are teaching that their church has all truth and that there is need of no more. Here we see that the church militant is in reality the church which is militant against advancing truth, and that the church triumphant is the church which marches on with the progress of the truth. This fact was seen at the very first step toward progress in the religion. Both Cain and Abel were endeavoring to walk in the highway of progress by each offering a sacrifice. Abel worshipped according to the wisdom of Yahweh, whereas Cain worshipped according to the wisdom of man. Cain's sacrifice was merely the counterfeit of Abel's. Here we see that where the truth is, there is also a counterfeit. While there are denunciations which were established on the truth, there are also counterfeits. That is what accounts for the great multiplicity of the denominations and sects. Cain slaying Abel for doing what the Yahweh would have him do is a type of the false worship, of the opposition and persecution. Thus has it been in the past and still is. Those who are in error are ever found hostile against truth and persecuting those who practice the truth. Now suppose that Abel had lived until our day and had followed the progress of the truth through each generation. What would have been his experience in the religion? He would necessarily have joined the Enoch movement with Noah, with Abraham, with Jacob, with Moses, with all the prophets, with John the Baptist and the apostles, then with the Lutherans, with the Presbyterians, with the Methodists, with the First Day Adventists, with the Seventh Day Adventists, and at last he would have joined the Davidian Seventh Day Adventists. In order for him to keep up with advancing truth, Abel would have had to leave one movement and join another at each new unfoldment of the truth. Otherwise, he would have remained as ignorant in the progress of religion as have the Jews. We now see as plainly as truth can make it that throughout the ages the church triumphant was and still is made up of the church members who unceasingly kept climbing the ladder of the truth all along unto this day. Ezekiel 36:23-24. And I will sanctify my great name which was profaned among the heathen, which you have profaned in the midst of them. And the heathen shall know that I am the Yahweh, saith Yahweh Elohim, when I shall be sanctified in you before their eyes. For I will take you from among the heathen and gather you out of all countries and will bring you into your own land. Here the truth is again reiterated. Those who are determined to stay down on the first rung of the ladder of the truth will be left there to stay forever. But those who keep pace with the truth shall be brought into their own land, no longer having to sit in the pews with the later sins and no longer having to tread the lands of the Gentiles. Ezekiel 36:25. Then will I sprinkle clean water upon you, and you shall be clean from all your filthiness, and from all your idols will I cleanse you. This thorough and final cleansing, you see, is obtained only after the church triumphant moves into the promised land. Those who fail to keep pace with the truth and who choose to stay with their idols will be unable to carry out their personal desires anyway, for they shall go into the holes of the rocks and into the caves of the earth for fear of Yahweh and for the glory of His majesty when He arises to shake terribly the earth. Isaiah 2:19. Ezekiel 36:26. A new heart also will I give you, and a new spirit will I put within you, and I will take away the stony heart out of your flesh, and I will give you an heart of flesh. When this cleansing takes place, then it is that a new heart and a new spirit will be given unto all who are now striving to grow in the knowledge of Yahweh and who are then found in the kingdom. As this heart operation takes place, to do the will of Yahweh will be but a natural thing. There will be no longer a struggle against the carnal heart. Ezekiel 36:27-29. And I will put my spirit within you and cause you to walk in my statutes, and you shall keep my judgments and do them. And you shall dwell in the land that I gave unto your fathers, and you shall be my people, and I will be your Elohim. I will also save you from all your uncleanness, and I will call for the corn and will increase it and lay no famine upon you. Daniel 12:1. And at that time shall Michael stand up, the great prince, which standeth for the children of thy people, and there shall be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation, even at that same time. And at that time thy people shall be delivered, every one that shall be found written in the book. Okay, lo, the world is already headed for the time of trouble, and when it is reached, refuge will be found only in an up-to-date truth, that puts one's name in Micah's Book of Heaven, Daniel 12:10. Many shall be purified and made white and tried, but the wicked shall do wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand, but the wise shall understand. who are the wise? They must be those who are ever searching for the golden oil, those who have their vessel full, Matthew 25:1-13. Those who are let in through the door are those who have obtained and followed an up-to-date map of the truth. Religion, brother, sister, is not something dead and waning. It is something living and growing, and Elohim's people grow with it. And now, in closing, I wish to leave this question for you to ponder. And to answer unto yourself, is this experience the experience of progressing with the truth, your experience? If it is not, then why not? Yes, why? Is it not worth everything, money, houses, lands, friends, mothers, fathers, husbands, or wives? Is it not worth all these in order to double them? See Isaiah 61:6, Mark 10:28-31. Okay, that ends timely greetings, number 151. We still got about 8 minutes left on our sermon. And our next study is our number 52, Town of Greeting, Volume 1. And it's also by B.T. Hollick, Seventh-day Adventist, Davidian, Sabbath, August 2nd, 1947. Okay, the subject of our study this afternoon is found in the 9th chapter of Ezekiel. We shall begin with Ezekiel 9:1-6. He cried also in mine ears with a loud voice, saying, cause them that have charge over the city to draw near, even every man with his destroying weapon in his hand. And behold, 6 men came from the way of the higher gate, which lieth toward the north, and every man a slaughter weapon in his hand, and 1 man among them was clothed with linen, and with a writer's inkhorn by his side. And they went in and stood beside the brazen altar, and the glory of the Yahweh of Israel was gone up from the cherub whereupon he was to the threshold of the house, and he called on the man clothed with linen, which had the writer's inkhorn by his side. And the Yahweh said unto him, go through the midst of the city, to the midst of Yerushalayim, and set a mark upon the foreheads of the men that sign that cry for all the abominations that be done in the midst thereof. And unto the others he said in mine hearing, go ye after him through the city and smite, that not your eyes spare, neither have ye pity. Slay utterly old and young, both maids and little children, and women, but come not near any man upon whom is a mark, and begin at my sanctuary. And they began at the ancient men which were before the house. Okay. Note that at the command of Yahweh, the angels in charge are to slay the sinners in Yerushalayim, parentheses, in the church. What church? The Seventh-day Adventist church. They're the spiritual Israel of today. They're the chosen ones that were chosen in 1844 to lead out in the restoration of the temple and the kingdom that was once set up and restored by David and Solomon, and built originally by David and Solomon. Not in the world, only the abomination-hating ones, those who receive the mark for sign and crime against the wrongs, are to be left. The day Ezekiel had this vision in Babylon, Yerushalayim had already been in captivity and emptied of his people for years. See Ezekiel 1:1-8:7. No such a purification or cleansing as here described ever took place in Ezekiel's day or in the annals of the church since his day. It is therefore certain that the prophecy is yet to be fulfilled. Inspiration in our day, moreover, puts this foreseen cleansing still in the future and makes this explanation. For the class who do not feel grieved over their own spiritual declensions, nor mourn over the sins of others, will be left without the seal of Yahweh. For the Yahweh commissions his messengers, the men with the slaughtering weapons in their hands, go ye after him through the city and smite. The city is a house of Israel, church. Let not your eyes spare, neither have you pity. Slay utterly old and young, both maids and little children, and women, but come not near any man upon whom is the mark, and begin at my sanctuary. Then they begin at the ancient men which were before the house. Here we see at the church, the Yeshua's sanctuary was the first to feel the stroke of the wrath of Yahweh. For the ancient men, those unto whom Elohim had given great light, and who had stood as guardians of the spiritual interests of the people, says the Spirit of Yahweh, had betrayed their trust. For the enemies of Yahweh, you know, have taken possession of the churches, but soon the tables will be turned, and the servants of the devil will no more be no more. They will fall and not be found. The people, you know, are deceived by the ancient men who have betrayed their trust. You well know that the prophets, the apostles, Yahshua, Messiah, and the Reformer were all in their time railed against and taunted as offshoots. But we thank Yahweh that the offshoots and the truth, not the dead tops, triumph. They, the ancient men, had taken the position that we need not look for miracles and the marked manifestations of Elohim's power as in the former days. Is not this now the position of the ancient men? Are they not now crying peace and safety? Are they not now preaching that Ezekiel 9 is not now to take place, and that it is not to take place in the church, that this message is a false alarm? What does it take to awaken a dreaming sleeper? They are dreaming that times have changed. These words strengthen their unbelief, and they say, Yahweh will not do good, neither will he do evil. Yahweh will not slay his people. For the church, the house of Israel, is his most precious object on earth, they say. Of course the church, the house of Israel, is his most precious object on earth. And that is just exactly why he is to cleanse it. That is why he is to slay the wicked in the midst of her, and seal, preserve the penitent, so that he may have a church clean, without spot, wrinkle, or any such thing. Ephesians 5:27. And the first one that is sealed starts with 144,000, Revelation 14:1-5. This brings the close of our steps. This hour, contact us at the 11th hour call, and that's number 11. Click on our audio archive to hear this message and more. Let us close now with a song. Well, okay, this is a sentimental favorite song that I've written, entitled Let the Heavenly Light Shine Through. Well, you would not have known about a wonderful Yah if he hadn't created you. And you would not have known about his vast creation and all that he can be. So draw near unto Yah, remember to pray, let the heavenly light shine through. And Yah in his mercy, when he comes again, will have a heavenly home for you. Let the heavenly light shine through. Let the heavenly light shine through. And Yah in his mercy, when he comes again, will have a heavenly home for you. There would not have been a creation of earth if Yah had never come down. He spoke the word our creation heard, and the world started spinning around. Then he spoke the word, and the light appeared. He divided it from the night. And Yah saw that his work was good, created by his mind. Let the heavenly light shine through. Let the heavenly light shine through. And Yah, when it's mercy, when it comes again, will have a heavenly home for you. Well, you climb up on a mountain and you look around. There's a green valley below. There's a moon up above that. Shining with love, there's a peaceful river that flows. There's the birds and the bees and the flowers and the trees and all that heaven can spare. And to think that this is just the glimpse of what's awaiting over there. Let the heavenly light shine through. Let the heavenly light shine through. And the hour and the mercy when it comes, the end will have a heavenly home for you. Yah in his mercy, when he comes again, will have a heavenly home for you. Up our voices and say,